Okay. Any questions, Ms. Godwin? Council, do we recall or do we know when the Senate acted on this and what the vote was, or do you have that information?
Well, I have to tell you that actually Bill Taylor is the one who has this file folder, so perhaps I should go get Mr. Taylor.
Okay.
It was very recent, Mr. Chair, within the last week and a half on that 1039 passed the Senate. I believe it passed without opposition, but we'll get a clarification on that. Shall we wait till Mr. Taylor's files come back?
Sure. I think you're up on the next
two bills. Yes, I am. Let me grab my papers on the next one. If this is Senate Bill 139, it must be Bill Taylor.
1039. Is the Senate vote. Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Godwin on 1039? Any other witnesses or testimony on 1039? Okay, if not, let's move on to 297.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Diana Godwin representing the Oregon State Bar. Senate Bill 297 was sponsored by the Bar's Committee on Uniform State Laws. And as you can see, it enacts the Uniform Law on Conflict of Laws. So you all remember from law school, Conflict of Laws was one of the more obscure subjects, but important. It's particularly important in today's mobile society because many legal disputes that once would have been purely local in nature now involve contacts with two or more states. Contracts, for instance, commonly involve a seller in one state dealing with a buyer in another state. For instance, an automobile accident, in the area of tort law, an automobile accident may involve a driver from state A whose car, manufactured in state B and purchased in state C, collides with a car from state D on the highways of state E. Conflict of laws, or conflicts for short, is the area of the law that deals with deciding which state's law applies to this accident. One of the more difficult conflicts problems is deciding which state's statute of limitations is going to apply. Some differences between the laws of different states may be minor, but the decision to apply one or another state's statute of limitations may mean life or death to a lawsuit. A once common answer to the problem was to apply the statute of limitations of the state where the case is actually filed or brought, regardless of where the dispute arose or what state's laws would be applied to other issues in the case. The idea was that a statute of limitations was procedural, and a court would always apply its own procedure, even when applying the substantive law of another state. This procedural approach has proved too simplistic, however, and most states have on their own adopted statutes that provided their own solutions to the problem, as did Oregon. Oregon has ORS 12.260, very short statute, which has not been amended since the 1953 recodification of the ORS. It very simply provides that when the cause of action has arisen in another state, territory, or country between non-residents of this state, Oregon, and by the laws of the state, territory, or country where the cause of action arose, an action cannot be maintained thereon by reason of the lapse of time. No action shall be maintained thereon in this state. The problem with that present statute is it only deals with cases involving where all parties are non-residents of this state and therefore is too narrow and just does not adequately address the problems that we still see in Oregon. As I said, no two states adopted the same kinds of statutes to deal with a conflict of laws in the area of statute of limitations. And often drafters of the statutes did not anticipate the variety of circumstances their statute might cover, as is the case in Oregon. In response to this, the Uniform Laws Committee, the National Uniform Laws Committee, drafted in 1982 the Uniform Conflict of Laws Limitations Act. It was completed during the ULC's 1982 annual meeting. This Uniform Act takes the general approach that when a court decides to apply the substantive law of another state, it should also apply that state's statute of limitations. But the new act also provides an escape clause to the general rule in a section labeled unfairness. And in our bill, that is section 4 of our bill. It says that when the limitations period of the state law, which is being used in the case, is substantially different from that of the forum state and has afforded no fair opportunity to sue upon or imposes an unfair burden in defending against the claim, then the forum state may use its own statute of limitations period. And I might say that the in the hearings in the Senate on this, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association support this resolution of this problem. They support the uniform law in this area of deciding when, which state's statute of limitations will apply in a case involving the laws of more than one state. Section 2 of our bill is the meat of the bill, and that does say which statute of limitations will apply. Section 3 clarifies that if you're going to adopt the statute of limitations of the other state, that that state's rules governing tolling of the statute of limits and accrual of a cause of action will also apply. But that other state's conflicts of laws statutes do not apply. And this is going to avoid your common renvoi problem, as I know we don't want to get into renvoi problems, and that's why that last phrase on line 18 is there. And that's a very short and straightforward bill. No amendments were made on the Senate side and no opposition. I'd be happy to answer questions, except about renvoi problems.
So you check that out for us. Any questions for Ms. Godwin on 297? Anyone else on 297? Okay, let's move on to 812 then, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to bring my alter ego up here. I get to stay for this one. All right.
Not another bar bill.
Bob Olson from the State Bar, Mr. Chair. The purpose of this bill is very basic. It allows for individuals who have custody of old wills to, at some point, destroy those wills. And that has been an ongoing problem for estate lawyers in Oregon. And the estate section of the state bar has spent a great deal of time and effort developing this language and accommodating all the interests within their ranks to come up with a proposal that would meet the different circumstances for doing that.
What was the Senate action on this?
28-0.
And no amendments, right?
No amendments.
Okay. Any further question or discussion on Senate Bill 812? Any other witnesses on Senate Bill 812? Okay, thank you. Chair, except we don't have a quorum.
I'll go look.
We can still.
Are we in work session?
It will be as soon as we get Representative Hamlin back. Yeah. We'll be at ease for just a few moments while we track down our fifth member. Okay, Council, I'd like to go ahead and take up a work session, the first bill that we had posted for work session today, which is 3116.
That's not my.
Are we here? Council here for that?
I'm here.
Okay. Okay, I understand there are some amendments prepared for that. Dash one amendments. I think I asked my office to prepare.
Yes, you should have those in your packets for you.
Can you wait till you
3116-1, dated today's date. The amendment provides that a licensee or permittee shall be liable for damages incurred by a minor off the licensee's or permittee's business premises if the licensee served alcoholic beverages to the minor knowing or having reasonable cause to know, to believe that the minor was a minor.
Okay. Have those been distributed to all members?
They should be in your packets, yes.
Okay, I believe
Sure.
Representative Dix.
You ready for a motion?
Yes.
I would move the amendments to House Bill 3116.
Okay, Representative Dix moves the amendments dash one to House Bill 3116. Any objection to those amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
I would move House Bill 3116 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Okay, Representative Dix moves House Bill 3116 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Baum? Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Okay, Senate Bill 726.
Mr. Chair, I'd
Representative Phillips.
I move 726 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Phillips moves Senate Bill 726 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamlin?
I'm going to vote no because it appears to me that the May 25A engrossed bill is the one we're looking at. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Because it appears that we're changing the standard from, for protection of privilege, from the person who has the authority to obtain legal services and act on advice on behalf of the client to, it appears, everyone within the corporate structure, including the janitor, at least from the, what I read on line 16 through 23, under the guise of corporate privilege. And I just think it's a broad expansion of the definition of what lawyer-client privilege should be. I think it's a major policy decision that we certainly haven't had the discussion in this committee on, that I can vote yes on.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Allen?
No.
Phillips?
Aye.
No. Motion's adopted. Okay, Senate Bill 905. I think that because we just had some additional amendments proposed to the amendments which were just received today, I'm going to feel a little more comfortable, and as a courtesy to Mr. Olson, allowing him the day he's requested to confirm with the organization he represents whether this latest set of amendments, again, just made available to us today and as further amended by the, or at least proposed to be amended with additional recommendations by Mr. Thompson. I'll try to repost this for a hearing and or work session within the next day or two. And again, we're operating under the 1 hour rule, but Mr. Graney and Ms. Hayes, you folks, please feel free to stay in touch with me. It'll be no more than a day or two. Okay, so we'll carry 905 over briefly. Let's proceed with 3351. Couple hearings on this. I think our last hearing was June 1st. Mr. Hummark was here to testify on that. Any motions on 3351?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
I would move House Bill 3351 to the full committee with a new pass recommendation.
Representative Dix moves House Bill 3351. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have those amendments, Council?
3351-1. They were distributed in our last work session.
Okay.
I don't have them. Yeah.
What are the effects of the amendments again?
The amendments add into the provisions dealing with PIP benefits a requirement or a statement that the benefits shall be overdue if they're not paid within 30 days after the insurer is furnished with written notice of the fact and amount of the covered loss. The intent is to encourage the insurers to pay these benefits promptly. It provides that PIP benefits that are overdue bear simple interest at the rate of 18% a year, which acts as sort of an incentive to get them paid in a timely fashion.
Council.
It also deals, the very last section, section 6 on page 4, provides that the PIP benefits that are paid shall not offset or be applied in reduction of the uninsured motorist coverage policy limits. And I believe that was kind of the focus of the testimony in our last hearing.
Mr.
When was that hearing?
Representative Bunn?
Several questions. First, do we have copies of those amendments? I don't find them in mine.
You should. They weren't in the packet today. They were handed out in our last
right here.
Work session. You don't have them?
I don't find them in my bill.
When was the last?
It was on June the 1st.
It might have ended up in a notebook instead of in our bill files if they were left out on our desk. Why not I ask council to make a few more copies of those amendments, and we'll share those with members and then come back to this after we've done the rest of our Senate bills. Mr. Taylor, do you have these other Senate bills up?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. Let me ask the members. Are members feel in the mood to take action on the balance of the three Senate bills we've had up today? 1039, 297, and 818.
Yes.
Okay. Let's take up 1039 relating to the administration of estates.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 1039 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Phillips moves Senate Bill 1039 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
The A engrossed version.
A engrossed version. Okay, is there any further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll on 1039.
Bunn?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion's adopted. Okay, how about on 297? Relating to the uniform conflict of laws limitation act. I have a motion on that.
Well,
Chair.
Representative Bunn.
I know I look like him, but Tom Hill.
Excuse me, Representative Hanlon. Heard a voice from that direction, couldn't distinguish. Representative Hanlon?
Senate Bill 297.
Right.
With the due pass.
Okay, Representative Hanlon moves Senate Bill 297 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Just a question. When did we originally hear this one?
Today.
And this is the first and last. First time we. This is the one you scheduled today.
Right. The last three were just brought to me this morning by council as a recommended add-on to this afternoon's schedule, and we posted it, I think, just before noon, and I announced it on the floor. And
yeah.
We will, Representative Phillips, for your information, if because we find due to the accelerated notice that I expect is going to be required of us as we deal with these late-coming Senate bills, this is subcommittee action only, and if we find that some folks need to share some information with us at full committee that they really didn't have an opportunity in subcommittee, we'll be glad to give them that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, this doesn't look like it'd be terribly controversial anyway to make a standard procedure for all states. I mean, I can't.
I think the Senate action on that reflects that. I think it was a 28 or 29-0 vote. Any further discussion on the motion on 297 to the full committee due pass?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
I would just not want to make it a standard that because the Senate vote was unanimous that it's a good bill, but I do intend on voting aye.
Okay, appreciate that. I think we all probably feel that way. There's no further discussion on 297. Clerk will call the roll. Excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Aye. Motion adopted. Okay, 812.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
I would move Senate Bill 812 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Dix moves Senate Bill 812 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Yes.
Representative Hanlon.
I'll oppose this. I don't understand why we make things easy for lawyers to get rid of wills, original wills that they hung on to, for the sole reason of having the estate beneficiaries come back in and probate the matters through the same office. I think they should be responsible and required to hang on to these wills for as long as necessary. And this bill does just the opposite.
In other words, the 30 years may be way too long or way too short, depending on whatever is necessary.
That's correct. Listen, as a lawyer, if I may just speak a bit further, as a lawyer, one need not keep control of the original will. One can do the will and allow that person to take it, put it in a safety deposit box, and I've done a lot of wills, and what I do is I always keep a copy in my confidential records, but advise the client to put those things in a safe place. I just think the mechanism for the lawyer keeping the original will is rather self-interested to begin with, and now to let those duties not be imposed on the lawyer to keep the original will is something that I just can't support.
Okay. Mr. Olson, did you want to try to respond? I don't know if...
Mr. Chair, I would just point out to the committee that the estate lawyers have spent a great deal of time discussing this. The original timelines are much shorter than the ones that were in the bill. So the ones that basically the more conservative members of the group that had Representative Hanlon's position won out in those discussions. And I think they would be glad to come in here and convince you that the 30 to 60 year period would catch essentially everything they've ever had or would have. And so I think they can make a good case for this. You're going to take the time to pursue this. They feel this is very important because there is no timelines now, and there needs to be some.
Mr. Olson, my sense is that you're going to have to summon those people to come down here. I appreciate the fact that you didn't have much notice today.
I'd withdraw my
motion. Dix withdraws his motion. What do you need, Bob, to get these folks down here? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Tomorrow?
Whenever.
We've got sub 3 tomorrow, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
What
yes.
time is that scheduled for?
I think it's 1.
Is it 1? Well, it depends a little bit on what. Do you need to know a time certain for your people? If we gave you 4 p.m. tomorrow?
Okay.
We'll give you 4 p.m. tomorrow.
Okay.
Would an earlier time be better, or?
I don't think it makes any difference.
Okay, let's say 4 p.m. tomorrow.
That will give us time to meet privately with Representative Hanlon if he so desires.
You may need to meet more than with Representative Hanlon, would be my guess.
Mr. Chair.
I've got a
2:30 meeting with the Secretary of State at the enemy. Didn't it? He might vote for anything. We're pretty much done.
Well, 3351.
You don't need my vote for that one.
Okay, we don't. Representative Phillips will be excused then. Okay, we'll carry 812 over until tomorrow at approximately 4 p.m. If, Mr. Olson, you find out it would be more advantageous to your people for us to try to schedule that at an earlier time, let us know. I don't think it'd be much earlier than 3. Okay, that leaves us with 3351. Did we get extra copies of those amendments?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, have we distributed those to everybody?
Yeah, do you need one? Are you sure?
Well, as a matter of fact, it wouldn't hurt. Okay, Representative Dix.
I'll move the amendments to HB 3351.
Okay. Okay, Representative Dix moves a dash one amendments to House Bill 3351.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
Wonder if Representative Dix would accept as a friendly amendment making a clear effective date that applies to any causes of action arising after the effective date of the act. I might just explain the amendment. The reason I make the amendment is because all of the insurance premiums to date have been set on the rules of the game up to this date, and if we make that clear, it starts it at that point.
I don't have any problem. What's the date you had in mind?
Mr. Chair, if there's not an objection, then I would ask that that become a part of the amendment.
I don't have any objection to that. Representative Bunn is moving as a friendly amendment that it be provided that this would not apply to any causes or any actions arising before the effective date of the act.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Okay.
And I don't believe there's an emergency clause, so it would have the normal effective date. Representative Dix, you accept that as a friendly amendment to your motion on the dash one amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
I wanted to express some concerns with the amendments in the bill itself. I want to point out on the bill itself that we're allowing a person to, in effect, self-insure